Welcome to podcast number 78 of My Favorite Detective Stories. Today's date is December 3rd, 2019, and I'm your host, John A. Hoda. Today's guest is Breon Joseph, LPI. She is the owner and head investigator at Sly Fox Investigations, a nationally recognized private investigations firm, and she has been licensed in the state of Louisiana for over 13 years. She has written published articles about private investigation. Mrs. Joseph was previously appointed the Region 2 Director of the Louisiana Private Investigators Association and has worked with other top investigators in the state updating the training manual for new investigators. She has literally helped write the book on private investigations there. She's been featured in several national publications, including Essence Magazine, The Atlanta Post, and many others. Breon is a breast cancer survivor, speaker, best-selling author, and philanthropist. Through her breast cancer empowerment brand, she travels the country as a keynote speaker at oncology conferences, educating doctors and oncology staff on ways that they can help empower their patients. She is also a keynote speaker for Women's Empowerment Summits. Sly Fox Investigations specializes in surveillance for insurance defense, child custody, and infidelity cases. Her agency specializes in process of service and is notorious for successfully serving those intentionally avoiding service. I welcome to the podcast, Breon Joseph. Welcome to My Favorite Detective Stories. My Favorite Detective Stories features successful private investigators. They offer insights into their careers and advice to those just starting out or to those who are struggling. You will learn from the best. Of course, we cannot finish the show without asking them to share their favorite detective story. On alternating weeks, we will hear from crime fiction writers who discuss their latest books and what makes their fictional detectives tick. Throughout my investigative career spanning five decades, I cannot think of a time that I didn't have a good crime novel on my coffee table or bedstand. We will also talk about their favorite authors as well. As a working investigator, coach, and writer, I hope to bring inspiration, information, and entertainment in the areas that interest me most. Gather around my campfire as I invite you to listen in. This episode is brought to you by my recently published books for private investigators. How to launch your private investigation business. How to market your private investigation business. And how to boost your private investigation business. It also appears a three-book set in How to Rocket Your Private Investigation Business, the complete series. All can be found at your favorite online retailers in ebook or softcover. Did you know that I also coach private investigators how to survive and thrive in business? Visit my website at www.thepicoach.com. That is thepicoach.com to learn more. Hey, Breon, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, I'm so pleased to have you on the show. I'm looking forward to our conversation today. And how is the weather down in New Orleans?
Well, let me tell you, it's a lot better than it was yesterday. It was freezing yesterday, and us Southerners are certainly not used to that. So it's a pleasant change today. Although it's still kind of chilly, it's not as bad as it was yesterday.
Hard to believe that it's chilly in New Orleans. That's
I know. I can't believe it either.
a little frost on the beignets, so to speak.
I know. We're certainly not used to that down here, I tell you. Yeah, Alaska needs its weather back immediately, really.
Yeah, send it right back up the Mississippi and over. Make a left up in Montana.
So, yes, I'm out of here.
Yeah, we have a chilly day here today in southern New England. Winter is trying to butt its ugly nose into the fall, and we've had a nice fall. We had a wonderful summer, but I'm looking at wind chills today that put us in the teens, and I'm just not real excited about going out tomorrow morning and serving subpoenas when people are still getting out of bed. And you know what subpoena service is all about, right?
Oh, yes, yeah. Definitely. You got to be out there to get them when they come on out.
That's right. Or get them before they wake up and get out. So
exactly.
So either way, you're right. I don't think I'm going to have difficult service tomorrow. I'm just going to have sleepyhead service. So, but that's okay. I can explain things to them. And before you know it, I'm off their doorstep, leaving them with a piece of paper in their hands. So let's talk about Sly Fox Investigations. You've been a private investigator for 13 years now, and let's talk about you being an entrepreneur. And I just want you to take the stage now and let it roll.
Sure. Oh, well, we actually, it's 14 years this September. So, we're 14 years this year.
Great.
Yeah. And so it's been an amazing ride for me. I'm an entrepreneur to my heart, and I always tell everyone that I'm an entrepreneur before I'm a private investigator, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and so with that mindset, I've always approached private investigation from just a business ownership standpoint in efforts to grow my brand. And it's definitely paid off, you know, the use of entrepreneurial concepts and things. It definitely paid off in my efforts, because we've come a very long way and we found a great deal of success along the ride.
And to your point, it is that mindset shift that has to take place, where an investigator goes from thinking like an investigator who has a business to a business person that provides investigative services.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that's the way you absolutely have to approach it. You have to be business minded before you are an investigator, you know, and that's the only way you're going to be able to market yourself and get yourself out there in front of the people who can give you money.
And to that point, again, it probably took me about 7 years to get that out of my head. For 7 years, I would go to conferences and not spend any time networking or trying to grow my brand, but instead I would be riveted to the classes to learn more field craft. And although, you know, learning more field craft was helpful, I really was missing out on the opportunity to learn more about the business that I was in. And I wish I had that kind of sense starting off. And I'm telling you that the sooner that private investigators who come from, say, law enforcement or some governmental type of work, learn about the business side of the business, they'll be much better off. So when you first decided to create Sly Fox, go back to those early days 14 years ago and tell me about it.
Well, when I first decided to start private investigation, I started off, actually, let me go back a little bit before that. I started off as a surveillance investigator for various other firms a long time ago. And that's really how I was introduced to private investigation. I started off as a surveillance investigator. Mm-hmm. And so that was my strong point. And so when I started my brand, that's what I focused on, what I was really good at. And so that's what we specialize in to this day. It's surveillance. And so, you know, once I found success in doing a lot of covert operations, and I realized that there weren't just a lot of women doing what I was doing. You know, it was certainly a male-dominated industry. Don't remember the numbers, but it might have been maybe 60,000 PIs or so back then, and only like 15% were women or something like that. And it wasn't a lot. So, you know, I was intrigued by that.
So to your point, again, and you make great points, you're crossing three business verticals. You're business to business, where Sly Fox Investigations is selling its services to insurance companies, third-party administrators, and attorneys that work in the insurance field. And the insurance investigations are related to either workers' comp claimants or bodily injury claimants, or maybe some disability claimants that are out on disability that for some sort of accident or health policy that are claiming some sort of disability when they're actually out, you know, working on a roof.
Right.
And then you also do business to consumer, where you're offering your services to individuals who have the need to know whether or not their children are safe when they're in the custody of the other parent, or when they're concerned that their loved one is, when they go out stepping out for a gallon of milk, is just getting the milk and not just stepping out, you know.
Right.
And then the third one, I think, is professional to professional, where you're dealing with the attorneys directly as opposed to individuals and or insurance companies, and so that you're professional to professional. So it does go across all three business verticals there. And you have to know to talk to each individual customer group differently, because they all have different needs, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, each group is just targeted from a marketing standpoint in very different ways. You know, my attorney, like 90% of our work comes from attorneys for insurance defense and things like that. And so the way that I market to them is definitely not the way that I would market infidelity to the general public. Our social media page, we speak to the general public there. I'm not marketing to my attorneys on my social media page. So the language is different.
Right.
So yeah, you definitely have to tailor what you say to each individual group, because it certainly matters. It's definitely a very different conversation among all three channels.
Oh, you're so right. And I like to think of it this way. And I mentioned this last night to a gentleman that I was talking to that's looking to possibly work with me on my coaching services. He said, I said to him, actually, when you're marketing to attorneys, the attorney isn't going to look for a website. They're not going to go to Yelp. They're not going to go into the yellow pages. They're going to call another attorney and say, hey, who do you use for this? And then you're going to get a referral from that attorney to the prospect attorney, and then it's up to you to do the sale.
Right. But they'll also go to the paralegal and say, hey, get me a PI. So it's who you make those relationships with that matter as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think that private investigators do not understand or appreciate the value of paralegals in law firms. I know that when my Thanksgiving cards go out, and yes, I have Thanksgiving cards as opposed to holiday cards. Oh, good. I'm glad that you have that tip as well, because your cards don't get lost in the flotsam and jetsam of the holiday season. You get your cards out there special.
That's a big deal to my clients, too. Mm. They have an overwhelmingly great response to that Thanksgiving card. It's just not typical. And so they love it and they look forward to it.
There are times when I visit my law firms in February and I'll go by my paralegal's desk and I'll still see my Thanksgiving card on her desk from Thanksgiving, and it's February, because it's a pretty card and, you know, it means something to them because I took the time to handwrite out a card to go to them personally.
Right.
I would have to say that half my half my Thanksgiving card list is paralegals and the other half are the attorney.
Oh, definitely.
Cool.
Definitely.
So, when you decided to market almost exclusively there, you also have other things that we talked about briefly at the very beginning, and that is process serving. Now, how do you attract clients for that, and how do you make that work for you?
Well, process service, we get that from the attorneys as well. So we have at least, I don't know, we've done maybe, I don't know, at least three or four of them yesterday or day before directly from attorneys. A lot of times we'll market process service. We do it for other places too. We primarily do it through direct mail with the attorneys, or specifically the family law attorneys will send information to them a lot of times because of those child support subpoenas and the different child support and custody issues that need to be served. Mm-hmm. So we hit the family law attorneys a lot. We also go to child support offices and hand out or leave like stacks of our cards and our numbers for some of the people there that are just sitting there and they're frustrated because they can't get the guy served and their caseworker is slow and all of these other things. So that's been a really great source of revenue for us, just marketing to those family services type of places, you know, things like that.
I got to tell you that up here in Connecticut, process of service is done by individuals, indifferent individuals. Mm-hmm. It's done by private investigators, but the bulk of it is done by judicial marshals. For some reason, the industry up here feels that the old sheriffs who are now judicial marshals have to do the service, and it's not the case. Now, in my state, they have to serve summons and complaints. We're not allowed to as private investigators. But are you allowed to do all service down there in Louisiana?
Yes, it's the same here to a certain extent, because we can only be appointed as the special process server in a case once the sheriff has made the attempt and failed. So once they're not able to do it, then that's when they'll look for a private process server. And you know, so it's a similar process.
Well, and I like to say that we're the barbers that fix the $5 haircuts.
Exactly.
And you know what we're talking about.
I know. Oh, yeah. I definitely know. Yeah. I definitely know.
Not that I ever think that you've ever had a $5 haircut. I don't think. But I certainly have. I have to tell you, not the last time I was served, because the last time I was served, the piece of paper was stuck in my door. But the time before that, I was served, the judicial marshal, I was out on my front yard reading a book in my yard under a shade tree. And he pulled into the driveway. I thought he was lost. And I think he was lost. But he got out of the car. He was wearing a pair of pajama bottoms. I'm not kidding you. Pajama bottoms. And he handed, he had a shirt on at least. And he handed me his wife's grocery list. And I said, look,
grocery list.
Yeah, I'd love to go to Stop and Shop and get this stuff for you. But, you know, really, I think, you know, maybe that's something you should do. He said, oh, I'm sorry. And he reached back into his car and he pulled out the subpoena and handed it to me.
Are you serious?
I am. I tell that story. That's a good story, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. It's almost unbelievable because who does that, really?
That's the $5 barber. You know,
oh, my gosh.
You know what I'm saying. Yeah. Wow. And this guy makes a living doing this work? You
right.
Know?
Pajama
pants and his wife's grocery list.
Yeah. You'll be surprised the type of people that you'll get out here that call themselves professionals in this field. Sometimes it's questionable.
I know, and we both go against that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're not. And I look at our profession, and I think a lot of people view us still sort of in that Sam Spade, the trench coat lurking in the shadows type of guy or gal. Sometimes you have to educate people and say, no, I don't break the law. And no, I'm not going to commit a felony to get you information illegally. I'm sorry. That's not going to work that way.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate that you have so many that are willing to break those rules and do those things. You know, if they're not making a lot of money, the income's not what they expect it to be, then they're more tempted perhaps to do those types of things. But it just hurts the industry so much, and it jeopardizes the integrity of the industry on a whole. And when you have someone that does those types of things, it just reflects poorly on the rest of us. And it's just a difficult reputation to break if you're trying to convince a client that you're not like that, you know?
Absolutely. I agree. So, but you mentioned on your website that you guys are good. I use the word guys, but I use that in the generic sense. You guys are very good at getting subpoenas served. And what do you think in the... what is it? And I'm going to get into surveillance too in a minute, but what do you think it is that makes you successful at making the difficult serve?
Well, I think one of the things that makes it easy for us is that nobody suspects us in the first place as someone who's about to serve them. Mm-hmm. We don't look like the sheriff. You know, we don't look like a private investigator, even to many people. You know, just me, I could follow someone in Walmart and they'll turn around and look at me and they're not going to say private investigator. You know what I mean? They're just not going to do it. We just don't physically look like a threatening person. So we were able to get up close to people who, and for example, we have a Spanish, Hispanic investigator. And she's so funny. She does so well on process service because she pretends that she doesn't speak English and she'll go and start talking to folks and they let their guards down because they're trying to understand what she's saying. And then she'll finally get them to acknowledge who they are. And then she serves them. And by the time they're served, they have no idea what just happened. So we just have so many different things that we do that just gives us a slight advantage in some of those difficult serves. Because we get a lot of the difficult ones, the ones that need to be served in the wee hours of the morning, or the ones who just refuse service or just hiding out. Mm-hmm. So we'll end up doing lots of stakeouts for process service and things like that. And we just had some this week where the guy threw the papers back out at the window. He wouldn't get out the car. And there was a woman the other day, the guy pulled up, he wouldn't get out the car, but the mom came out and kind of stood between the investigator and him and demanded that we talk to her instead of her grown son. You know, you'll be amazed at some of the things these adults do to avoid getting served. It's mind-blowing for me. But we still get it done. It's just insane the things you have to do sometimes.
Well, knowing that I have to go out in the chilly cold tomorrow and serve five subpoenas on a case, that's just warming to know that I can be prepared for this tomorrow.
Right.
I have to tell you, one of the best service of process stories ever was this gentleman just refused service, absolutely refused service, almost ran over servers in his driveway when they were standing there, and he pulled out of his driveway and wouldn't stop. Okay. Almost ran over a server.
Wow.
Right. So, it was around, mid-October when I got the assignment. And I said, if you guys can wait until October 31st, I think I'll be able to do it. And they said, why? And I said, well, let me just give it a shot. So, on the evening of October 31st after a group of trick-or-treaters left his front door.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. The guy in his full baseball uniform opened up his bag and said, "Trick-or-treat." And the man looked at me and I said, "Well, yeah, it's either a trick or a treat." And I reached into my bag and I handed him his subpoena.
Love that.
Yeah. We actually became friends.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, after he got over the fact that I skunked him, yeah, we actually got over it. But I always thought that Halloween was a great night to serve process. It was also a great night to get covert video of a subject that you're having trouble getting video of because, you know, they will open the doors sometimes for the kids trick-or-treating.
Yes,
it's just getting the kids to wear that body cam. That's a little hard. That's the problem.
I know. Yeah, we love covert assignments. That's something. We did a covert assignment last night, actually, at a hotel. It came in kind of at the last minute, like at 2 o'clock, and we needed to be there for like five. But there was like an event at some kind of gala or hotel we had to buy this ticket to. And the investigator ended up going and she located the subject and got video of her. And I make, you know, a lot of the stuff that I use. I have a covert purse that I made and we use that. And so she just set the purse on the table and recorded. And it's just the easiest types of assignments for us. You know, we love to do covert assignments.
Yeah, I'm sure it was not a Versace purse.
It was not.
You would not do that to such a nice little purse anyway.
No.
So I know we're talking about field craft a little bit, which is okay. I mean, come on, we're investigators. You got to talk about the biz a little bit.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the biz a little bit. So you have how many people on staff and you're in two cities, right?
Yeah. So we have eight. We have, five in Baton Rouge, three in New Orleans. And we work primarily in New Orleans and Baton Rouge, but we do work the entire state. We work anywhere. The majority of our work does definitely happen along the Gulf Coast, though.
Okay. And educate me a little bit on Louisiana. What's the farthest that you drive to for your cases and how far would that be?
Yeah, we typically go 4 hours, which is Shreveport, the northern part of the state.
Okay. And so you got a pretty good population there that you're able to do that with. And going across those three verticals, working for attorneys, insurance companies, and the public, I'm sure that there's not a day goes by that you don't get some sort of inquiry that people are looking to do service with you.
No, we're blessed in that regard. And it's a lot of hard work that went into being able to have a steady flow from our clientele like that. You know, it's entrepreneurship. It's just so many setbacks and roadblocks and dead ends that you come into when you're trying to build your brand. And so once you finally get it right and you finally hit that sweet spot and you finally make these connections and these relationships and then they know, like, and trust you, then, you know, once you get a client to know you, to like you and to trust you, then that's it. You know, you're going to be found a friend, and people like to do business with their friends. So it's just always important to try to cultivate that friendship more so than the salesman approach.
True.
You know, and so if you can get them to know and like you as a friend, they're more likely to share you and to get you other business and referrals as well.
Amen. And
yeah.
I'm not going to say anything different about that. I look at some first call sales techniques, and I cringe when I think about how the investigator may go right for trying to craft an assignment into a pretty high paying thing without really understanding what the person's needs are, or talking to them,
right,
really getting to know what they truly need as opposed to what they want.
Exactly.
And I just feel that it's time well spent to get to know the person. And, you know, most jobs, or I shouldn't say most jobs. Yeah, not most client relationships go sour because there is a lack of communication. There is a lack of trust between the service provider, the private investigator, and the client. And I think that's
right,
where most of the time it goes south. If you can look at most cases, it's because the most reasons that you're picking up new work from other private investigators is because that other private investigator did not manage the relationship properly.
Right.
And is that a good way of putting it?
Yeah, it is. It is absolutely. And you know, a lot of times, you know, if people don't want to put in the time, I think, that it takes to cultivate that relationship. You know, they just want to just pass out business cards just randomly with no intention. And, you know, in order to be successful in business, you have to have some type of strategy. You know, you have to have some type of plan in place, something written, some type of objective, something that's measurable and something that you refer to, you know, along your journey with in marketing. And so a lot of times we don't take the time to plan those things out. We're just randomly handing out cards and you're never going to be successful like that. Like if you're trying to reach out to someone, do a little research on that person first. Find out what school they went to. Find out the common ground, you know, find out what they like to do. And then when you have that initial conversation with them, you can bring some of those things up and then you'll instantly have that rapport that you need to start opening those doors to the friendship that you ultimately want to get. You know what I mean?
No, I know exactly what you mean. And my son and I both are part of Hoda Investigations. And I think he's a little bit better at that because he'll take a look at the social media for the client before he will go into any kind of discussion about getting in to talk to them about an appointment. Maybe I'm a little bit more cut and dry. I like to find out almost immediately if the person is even interested.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I can, when my son and I are sitting in adjacent rooms doing our marketing, I can hear him having this wonderful conversation with a prospect. And a lot of times it doesn't necessarily end in a sale right on the spot, but don't you know, 6 weeks later, they call him up and they say, hey, I remember talking to you before. You said you could do this. What do you think you can help me with now? And because why? He's established a relationship. He's gotten into a conversation. He talked to the person about them, which is always the most exciting subject, them.
Right.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. You have to make it about them, you know, and most of the time that's a really great point that you made, that they're not going to call you immediately a lot of times, you know, but they will remember you. So you want to do something that makes you memorable. And so when they do need you 3 months later, they say, oh, I remember, you know, that I have so many attorneys who contact me from a flyer that I might have sent 6 months ago that had some kind of promotion or something. And they're talking about, yeah, the promotion with such and such. And I'm like, oh my God, that was like 6 months ago, but they didn't need me 6 months ago. They need me now. So it still worked because they called.
Oh, I know.
And
what's even better is when you get a call from another attorney who says, I called Joe Good and Joe Good has your flyer. He pulled the flyer out and he said, I should talk. So now Joe Good might not even have a job for you, but he thought enough about that to give that referral to another attorney who's now calling you for the work. So
that's
great. that's great stuff. Oh yeah. Man. And I know that, now, do you run specials or do you do any type of things where you're trying to get a little bit of an uptick in assignments or possibly get people to move off the fence from where they think your rates are and where they would be willing to be?
Well, I don't negotiate my rate. So I charge what my experience tells me that I'm worth, and I expect people to respect that. Mm-hmm. So I don't like lower my rate for like promotional things like that. If I do anything, it might be like if we're looking for, you know, process service or something, we might market it as, a free notarized affidavit or something. Like, it's not going to be anything huge where it's something that we're going to lose money on. You know what I mean?
Oh, I know.
So we'll do it. Yeah, we'll do it in a way where it appears that there is this free thing, but it's not something that's going to cut into our cost a ton. So, but, you know, we don't lower our rates at all. A lot of times, you know, because people like to shop around and try to get the lowest rates and things like that. But, you know, that type of stuff doesn't bother me. You know, all I could do in situations like that is just perfect my ability to explain my value to them and why I'm the better choice, and let them make that decision ultimately. And you know, I have different things that we have accomplished as a brand that I usually refer people to, from the testimonials to the you know, just the media attention that we've gotten, and just try to make us look in a better light than perhaps some of our other competitors, and just do things that would make them pick us, you know. But I would never lower my rate because it's just not something. You can't operate a business when you're lowering your rates like that, and it's not something that I'd suggest, really.
Yeah. No, I'm not disagreeing with you on that. I'm just saying maybe offering a special or something where you're giving something out that not necessarily for free, but at a discount just to maybe get a first-time customer in the door. And that's why I suggested
it. Oh, okay. Yeah. So just like some kind of initial type of thing. Well, I don't think we don't do much of that. I think if anything, we may offer like a free social media report with surveillance or something like that. We'll do something, you know, we'll give them an add-on.
Give an added value.
Yeah, we'll give them like the free, especially for the comp claims, we'll tell them we'll do a free social media sweep for the claimant and see what they're doing online or something like that. You know, we'll just kind of sweeten the deal with maybe perhaps some promotion like that.
I got you. No, I attend two conferences a year involving one particular attorney specialty group here in Connecticut. And my flyers on the table might have, you know, a fall special, you know, that 10% off your first assignment between now and December 31st. And so I get calls December 27th, you know, oh, I've got the special here. I get calls on January 7th saying, oh, I forgot to do this last week. And of course I honor it, but and 10% isn't going to kill me. If I lose 10% on an assignment, I should have factored in enough of a profit margin in my work to allow for that. And then what's the cost of a one-time assignment 10% off for a lifetime value of a customer?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, I do something similar. I think when now that I think about it, we have a referral program that we do with our current clients, where if they refer another attorney or client to us and then we book the case with them, then we'll give them kind of like a finder's fee. We'll give them, send them $100 or something. You know what I mean? We'll do something like that for the referral. So, and that kind of encourages folks to send their colleagues over to us anyway. So we do something similar to that.
That's fantastic. I mean, that's really good. Now, you've got other parts of your life. You're just not, living in a car or doing surveillance. You've got other things that you've got going on in your entrepreneurial world. Why don't you just tell me about, you know, how your life has been shaped by the rest of life's events?
Yeah, I also have a breast cancer empowerment brand. It's called Punk Ass Cancer. I wrote a book about it. My book's on Amazon. It's Punk Ass Cancer, How Dare You? I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2015. I was fortunate enough to catch it early enough where I'm a survivor, and I did not have to do anything extreme like a lot of people have had to do. And, you know, I'm just very blessed and very fortunate in that regard. And so the entrepreneur in me said, well, you know, let's try to find a bigger platform for this, because when I was diagnosed, I was under 40. And the problem that I ran into was the fact that there weren't screenings for women, for mammograms for women who were under 40. So they were really hesitant to do the mammogram for me to begin with. And I was really persistent. You know, I knew something was wrong, and I was persistent with them, and they eventually did it. And that's how the breast cancer was discovered. But had I not been an advocate for my own health, then I might have a different outcome. So, you know, long story short, you know, that bothered me a lot. And I thought that a lot of women would not be as persistent as I am. That's just my personality. A lot of people are just not like that. And so I am blessed to travel the country now as a keynote speaker at oncology conferences, where I get the amazing opportunity to educate doctors and oncology staff on ways that they can better empower their patients from a patient's perspective. And I'm able to share my book with them, and I'm able to, more importantly, find solutions and ways to better the patient-provider relationship and kind of transform it, because there's a lot of different things that were problematic for me, and I get a chance to talk about those things. And I went around and I actually interviewed other breast cancer survivors and found out, you know, I just asked them, you know, if you could talk to your oncologist and you could, you know, require of them one thing that would have made your experience that much better, what would that one thing be? And so I asked so many of these women what changes they would like to see. And so I created a PowerPoint presentation based on all of that information and research that I collected. And I present that PowerPoint presentation at these conventions, these oncology conferences across the country, so that they can hear their patients tell them what they would like to see done differently. And so that's one way that I have used the my entrepreneur background to do other things and dive into. And I'm also a speaker for women's empowerment events we just had. Well, we had one last year, I think was the last one I did. It was a One Woman Fearless Empowerment Summit, came to New Orleans. I was one of the speakers for that. So I do, you know, public speaking for different events, you know, for cancer events and also for women's empowerment events. You know, those are just some of my other entrepreneurial endeavors outside of private investigation.
And you're living it too, you know, you're living proof. You're a cancer survivor that spoke up for herself and got and made sure that you got to it before it got to you.
Right.
Seriously got to you. And that's a better way of saying it. And you also saw that it's just not a matter of it being about a one particular diagnosis, a woman to oncologist. It was also about empowering women to stand up for themselves, be assertive, to be able to do the things that they need to do in order to have equal footing in society and not have it and not have them be looked at in some negative fashion. Is that a good way of, is that a good way of saying it?
Yeah, it is. All right. It is actually. It's a very good way to say it. And, you know, so many great things have come from that opportunity. And, you know, it's just my one of the biggest things, you know, I wrote the book just to inspire other people who have been in dark places, because, you know, when you get diagnosed with breast cancer, it takes you to a very dark place, a very, very dark place. You know, I was depressed for a while. You know, it was a very difficult time for me. And at some points I didn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. And so once I was able to find my voice again and to find my passion again, and see the light again, I wanted to create something that would help others do the same thing, because I just know firsthand how difficult it is to come out of something like that, that type of darkness. And so that's what the book is about. It's about, empowerment and finding ways to find your light again. And the great thing is that it's benefited not only people who are going through cancer, but just people who are going through rough times, you know, and who could benefit from some type of inspiration. So we've got lots of great reviews on it on Amazon. It was number one on the Amazon bestseller list for a while too. So I'm really proud of that. And it's just great. You know, something else that I do, you know, on my little side job.
Yeah, in my spare time. Yeah.
Yeah, my side job.
Yeah, my side hustle. You know,
yeah.
It's funny, but it's not. And what I was thinking as you were talking, both about the empowerment conferences and summits, as well as the writing of the book, this was you giving. This wasn't an idea of, this is how I'm going to monetize my own misfortune. This is not how I'm going to monetize the darkness that I went through and came out the other side. This was you giving. And by you giving, you receive. And you receive so much. Can you talk about all the things that you've received because of the fact that you've given so much in this area of empowerment, and especially empowerment when it came to breast cancer survival?
Yeah, it definitely came from a place of giving. And I'll tell you, my initial thought for writing the book was that when I was diagnosed, you automatically think you're going to die. Like, you don't care what anybody says. They don't tell you how good you don't care how good your chances are. In your mind, you think you're going to die. And so when you have that mindset, you know, which is what I had, I immediately thought about my children. I immediately thought about my family. And so my immediate thought was, I want to write a book to document what's happening so that my children would know firsthand from me how much I love them, because I spoke a lot about them in the book and my love for them, because I felt like if I didn't know if I was going to die today or tomorrow, I just didn't want anybody else to have to explain to them how I felt about them. I wanted to create something that they could one day read themselves from my own words, that I knew if I published it, that it will be around and it won't get lost and under the sofa somewhere. If I just wrote it in a notebook. You know what I mean? That was one of the main ideas that I had for writing it. And then as I was writing the book, and I started experiencing that darkness that I spoke of earlier, then the book became more so a guide for other people, because I just didn't want people to have to feel what I felt. So, you know, that's really how the book came about. But, you know, so many great things have come from me giving of myself in that way. At first, I was reluctant to. Nobody really wants to talk about that type of thing. But I realized that it was much bigger than me, and that so many people could benefit from my experience. And I felt obligated to put it out there. And people come to me after the conferences, and so many people cry. I have videos of people coming to me after the conferences thanking me because they weren't able to articulate or verbalize what they felt. And they were just so happy to hear my experience because it was exactly their own. And they were just so grateful for me putting myself out there like that. So many, that was a blessing to me to be able to touch somebody's life like that, you know, so many lives like that. And even from speaking at the Empowerment Summits for overcoming fear and being the best version of yourself and other things that I talk about at these women's empowerment summits, you know, people come up to me after those and they're, you can just see the light in their eyes. They're just like, oh my God, I was just so afraid. But now, thanks to you, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do this. And it's just an amazing feeling that I get to know that I was able to just inspire folks in that type mm-hmm. of way. And that's really what I do it for.
Yeah. And a lot of times, where we as private investigators are not always cast in the best light.
Right.
But when we act for the best interest of our clients, and we're acting many times to give them answers that they can't find anywhere else, and the relief that they find, the sense of getting the truth in a situation is so important to them that we are actually providing a wonderful service to them. I know I shifted us away from being an entrepreneur about empowerment and breast cancer awareness, but also back to what we both do for our day jobs. There has to be some sort of sense of how do we live our life and how does our livelihood help other people?
Absolutely.
And when we're able to help other people, and if we're able to frame it that way, as opposed to, well, geez, how much money can I make on this job?
Right. It's all about what value you can bring, what difference you can make, how many lives you can change with your work product. And that's very, very important to us at our agency. You know, we are an all-female agency. And so all of us, we're all mothers. We all have children.
Okay.
So especially, you know, child custody cases, we have a special place in our heart for child custody cases and situations where we have an opportunity to put children in better situations. We're all on top of that, you know, as mothers, you know. And so I sleep very well at night knowing that I played a part in taking a child out of a potentially dangerous situation. And so that's the type of value that I try to market. That's the type of value that I want my clients to know that I can provide for them, that peace of mind that they're looking for. They're looking for resolution. They're looking for answers, you know, and if I can, and if I could be a source for that, you know, I feel very, very good about that.
No, I can hear that. I can feel it. So, and we're just getting into our conversation, but we could probably go on forever. and Brianne, I'm just wondering, what else is it that you'd like to cover while we're talking about Sly Fox Investigations and about your entrepreneurship? Have I left anything out that you think that my listeners would appreciate?
I think we covered a good bit. I think the only thing, I don't know, what else would I add? You know, a lot of times I think we get discouraged a lot when we don't see immediate results. So if anything, I'd just like to encourage people to just keep pressing on and to not allow, like when we fail at things, and as a private investigator and as a new business owner or just a business owner in general, you know, we have to learn how to anticipate failure and expect it in order to grow to be, you know, where we want to be in our businesses. Because I think it's important to realize that the most important point after failure is your mindset right after the failure, if that makes sense.
Oh, sure.
You know, because, you know, when you fail, you doubt yourself, you second guess your ability. You're like, oh my God, this is not even the job for me. Why am I even doing this? I can't do it. But, you know, you have to be able to have the mindset that, you know, you can choose to either wallow in that disappointment or you can shake it off and take the lesson and move forward with your goals. And as long as you continue to just shake it off and take the lesson and move forward with your goals, then that's when you'll find success. So just don't get stuck in the self-doubt that you feel when things just don't go right, because they won't go right. You have to expect it. But that's a good thing, because if they don't go wrong, you won't learn the right way to do it. So it's just a lesson.
Right.
It's really just a lesson. And so I guess that would be the only thing I would say, is just to trust yourself, trust the process, know that it doesn't happen overnight, but results will come with consistency and hard work. And so I think that would be the last thing I'd like to impart to your audience.
That's great. Now, how can people get in touch with you, Breanne?
Oh, sure. Our website is slyfoxinvestigations.com. My email is slyfox@slyfoxinvestigations.com. And you can also follow us on social media. We have a Facebook page, facebook.com/slyfoxinvestigations. Facebook is our most active social media page. I do have an Instagram. I think it's the SlyFoxPI. Or Sly Fox Breanne Joseph, but the main one is Facebook. So you can certainly find us on Facebook if you'd like to reach out. If you're in Baton Rouge, you can give us a call, 225-305-7468. If you're in New Orleans, you can reach us at 504-457-7627. So that's how you can reach us.
And that's how I reached out to you a couple, 3 weeks ago, and you called me back in less than 5 minutes.
Yes, I did.
Yes, you did. And that is a testimony to you.
Yes.
And I just wanted to thank you. No, I thank you for everything that you do. I appreciate everything about the way you go about business, the way you go about your life. I think there's a lot of good things to be learned there. And I think there's a lot of valuable lessons from it. These weren't lessons that came easy to you, like you said. Some of these are hard fought lessons, but just lessons just the same that have improved the character of the person that you are. So I just wanted to, say, I wanted to have you on the show, because I just felt that during the dark days of winter that are coming, having a bright light like yourself on here will just make things warmer and brighter. So,
oh, how sweet are you? Thank you.
Well, no, I mean that in all sincerity. I wouldn't just,
thank you.
I mean, I know we're private investigators and we know how to pretext people, but no, I. No, I know that you're the real deal, Breanne, and I wanted to tell you that before I got off the line myself, okay?
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to be on this show with you.
Thank you for listening. I hope that I've earned your interest and your time. Please leave any comments on the website, www.johnhoda.com. That's JohnHoda.com. Our guest next week is Howard Michael Gould. Mr. Gould began his career on Madison Avenue before moving to Los Angeles, where he has worked as a screenwriter and playwright, as well as executive producer and head writer on a number of network comedies. Last Looks is his first novel and was turned into a movie titled Waldo, starring Charlie Hunnam and Mel Gibson. He's also been involved with several movies, The Six Wives of Henry LaFay, Instant Mom, and Shrek the Third. The Last Looks was nominated for Best First Private Eye Novel by the Seamus Awards in 2019, and I had a chance to meet Howard at the Seamus Awards ceremony in Dallas, Texas a couple weeks ago. This is going to be a fun interview, I guarantee it.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you enjoy this podcast and would like to hear other great detective stories, please go to the website and click on our podcast page. There you'll find the backlist. Now, you're probably asking, John, what about your own stories? Do you have any? Sure enough, I do. And they are available to you free as a download right to your inbox. I have 8 short stories and 8 vignettes in a book titled Mugshots, My Favorite Detective Stories. Now, here's my ask. If you were either informed, inspired, or entertained by the stories today, don't be bashful. Share this link with your friends. Better still, go to the iTunes website and leave a review. It's the best way to grow the circle around our campfire. If you have any questions, please contact me through the website, www.johnhoda.com, JohnHoda.com. Thanks so much, and have a great day.